They laughed, they cried, they sang songs, they pulled pranks on one another, they loved, they fought, they had fun, they worked, they shared things with one another they had never shared with anyone else, they discovered things they never knew about themselves, they encouraged each other and they challenged each other. They grew as individuals and they grew as a group. They were what every small group of people would hope to become, and it lasted for 10 years. Then one night, the thing that originally brought them together was over, and the group disbanded. Each member went his or her own way. It was a sad night for millions of people all over the world. The group I'm talking about are the characters of a sitcom called MASH. How many of you remember the last episode of MASH? How many remember MASH? How many have never seen MASH? Okay. The same thing happened with Friends, and the same thing happened with Seinfeld. Okay, you've seen some of those? The last episode. I guess my point is, it's amazing how connected we get to a group of people that are just playing roles. And how is it that we connect to them? Well, we connect to them because we've watched them or listened to them on a weekly basis, sometimes on a daily basis, for a number of years. Now, this last 3 weeks, we've been talking about our personal walk with God, our marriage walk with God, and our family walk with God, and we've been talking about how it happens, talking, listening, repeatedly. Well, with these characters on television, we don't even get to talk. All we're doing is listening and watching, and still, with just listening and talking over a period of time, we get connected to people who are make-believe. And we get so connected to them that we're kind of sad when it ends. This betrays an unbelievable need that we have to get connected to a small group of people that is beyond our own family. In fact, we have such a strong desire to connect with a small group that's beyond our own family. If we don't have a real one, we'll settle for a surrogate one. Question: why isn't family enough? What do small groups do that families don't? And when we're talking about a small group this morning, we're talking 3 to maybe 20 people. And people do it through books, they do it through movies, a lot of different ways. What is the nature of small groups? If you look on your outline, you want to fill in these blanks if you'd like. The nature of small groups. The nature of small groups, and why are they so different from a family? Part of the answer might be in the old saying, you can choose your friends, your small group, but you have to what? You have to live with your family. If you look on your outline, family begins with biology. We start having kids, they're related to us. It's biology that connects us. A small group begins with a shared interest. We join a small group because this group of people has the same interest that we do. If you like fishing, you join a group of people that like fishing. The people on the job site, they're all in the same field. Perhaps they work for the same company. You like sports, you're with this group of people that likes this particular sport. You like crafts. You're with other people that like crafts. You like horses. You're with these people who like horses. Small groups are formed around some special interest, some cause. Families are just formed around biology. You can have the same interest or not. It doesn't matter. You're still a family. Family is held together, if you look at the next one, family is held together by the glue of unconditional love. There's a saying that he has a face only a mother could love. Because mothers have to love their children. But small groups are held together by conditional love. It's not unconditional love. It's conditional love. It's conditioned on your like of the same thing that I like. If I'm in a horse group, you have to like horses, just like I like horses. If you stop liking horses, like I like horses, you stop being in the same group. And if I'm not getting what I need from this group, this special interest group that I'm a part of, if it doesn't support me in this special interest, I quit the small group. It's conditional on the purpose for which it rallies around. So the power of a small group is its appeal to this unique special interest, the things that we are attracted to or the activities that we like doing. If you look on your outline, the need for small groups. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. Two are better than one because they have a good return on their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not so quickly broken. Okay, how does this work? My brother likes fishing, but he seldom fishes all by himself. Fishing with fellow fishermen seems to be more satisfying. Why? His small group of fishing actually does three things for him. One, he gets support from the members of his group. If you look on your outline, the need for small groups is the need for support. Somehow being with a bunch of other fishermen helps him or gives him a more satisfying experience of fishing. And then on the other side of the coin, he ends up giving support. He gets support from his small group, but he ends up giving support to his small group. And finally, the third thing we'll talk about later is there's a different experience that happens that isn't even fishing. It's a people experience. That somehow, that even though we're connected here because of our special interest of fishing, somehow when I'm supporting you and you're supporting me, somehow there's a people thing that happens that's almost regardless of the special interest. But we'll talk about that. Small groups then, in effect, are support groups. Members of a group support each other in their common interest. You and I, it seems, need other people in our lives who are trying to do what we're trying to do in order that we can succeed at what it is we're trying to do. So if you want to be a basketball player and you want to be good at that, then you need to join the small group of a team of basketball players. If you want to succeed in getting in shape, then you need the support of a fitness club group. If you want to improve your speaking abilities, you need something like Toastmasters. If you want to be free from alcohol, joining a small group like AA would help. If you want to learn something, join a class. If you want to have a better lawn, move to a subdivision where they all take care of their lawns. Because they will support you in your special interest of keeping your lawn. There's always one guy in your neighborhood that specializes in growing dandelions. And all the neighborhood get together, and this is the guy we want out of our small group. Well, all these groups, formal or informal, whether you recognize them as small groups or not, they all give you an opportunity to support and be supported in the thing that you're interested in. And most of us are part of all kinds of small groups. Many of them we're not even aware of. We're not even aware of that we're in these small groups, but we are. And they all do the same thing. They help us in some special interest, some special cause. Well, how do small groups do this? How do small groups create this environment in which you can succeed in your special interest? If you look on your outline, how do small groups give support? Two ways. Number one, by spurring. By spurring, Hebrews 10:24, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. And two, by encouraging. Let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another and all the more as you see the day approaching. Spurring and encouraging. And you see this, don't you? A basketball coach I got to know in my first church was Scott Soltzma. Any of you heard of him? He began his high school career up in northern Michigan. Then he moved to, I think, Iowa. Then is he in Hudsonville now or somewhere around there? Unity. Okay. He's taken several girls' teams to the championship. I think he's won a few times. Anyway, he was in my church, my first church, and I got to watch him lead practice once. And he's a guy in constant motion, and he's constantly saying things. And he jumps, he's jumping back between spurring, come on you kids, move, come on, get the lead out. Spurring, poking, shoving. You know, what is a spur? A spur is that pointy thing that the cowboy wears and he gives the horse a poke. But then encouraging, come on, we're good. Hey, good shot. Way to hustle. You'd go back and forth. I tell you, if I could lead the church like he led a basketball team, wow, our church would be something. But it's both of these things, spurring and encouraging. That's what a small group does. Now, some groups are more subtle in their spurring. Some of you men work with a bunch of men, and it's not subtle at all. You know, guys like to spur. You call that a wall, you know? Have you ever heard of a plumb line? You know, things like that. It's all sarcasm. Even when we want to encourage you, we use sarcasm, you know? That's the way guys do it. But even in non-guy situations, my wife was in a quilting guild, and they spurred each other, but they did it real subtly. They didn't, you know, the quilting thing, you know, let's say someone does the quilting and the quilts are way too wide. That's just a no-no in the quilting world, and this woman comes in with a quilt and it's too wide. The women don't gang up on her and say, what kind of quilter are you? I mean, come on, they have to be tight quilting. You're dragging our whole team down. Get with it. No, that's not what they say. They look at the quilt and go, well, isn't that nice? They don't say anything. But they have other ways of spurring. They have these contests, and there's prizes, and there's blue ribbons, and there's red ribbons, and then there's honorable mention, and then there's just mention. And this one never gets a mention. And after 3 years, she goes, now, how come mine never gets a mention? Well, to be honest, if you could just make your quilting a little bit tighter, just a little bit tighter, just a suggestion, you know? But it's a way of spurring. The whole thing is set up. They're comparing all the time, and it doesn't take very long for you to figure out what is the right thing to do, how to grow in this special interest. Because that's why people join. You join a special interest group because you want to improve. This is your area. This is your arena. And how are you going to improve unless someone tells you the truth? And often that feels like spurring. But if someone's always just kicking you and spurring you, and you never know when you do it right, so you need encouragement too. It's really, in some ways, I almost don't want to use the word, but it's a little bit like competition. Small groups get together, and there's internal competition within the small group. And then if you're on like a basketball team, there's competition for what position you're going to play. But then once you figure that out, there's the competition against other teams, and all of a sudden you become this united team against this other team. And it's in this competitive atmosphere, this comparing atmosphere, this peer pressure atmosphere. That's what it is. Spurring and encouraging. That's what's going on. You think of all the little small groups, even in your neighborhood, the lawns. Oh, this lawn really looks nice. Mine doesn't. Oh, we compare. I didn't know my lawn didn't look nice until yours looked so nice. I don't know what a nice lawn looks like. You're not born knowing what a nice lawn looks like. You learn that over time after looking and seeing what's going on. You don't just learn sports. You're not born playing basketball or baseball. You play with others, and someone hits it well, and you go, well, how does he hold his bat? Maybe I should do that. You learn from one another. You support one another. Well, that's how small groups do it, by spurring and by encouraging. Well, why do we need all this support? What are we doing in our lives that we need all this support? Look on your outline. The great cause. Small groups need a cause. Without a cause, small groups fall apart. You don't have a cause. See, families don't need a cause. Family is a family. these are your kids, you're related, this is your husband, this is your wife, that's it. There's no special cause, you're just there. But small groups need a cause, or you stop going, you stop attending, it falls apart. You need some kind of cause. Well, there is a great cause that's behind all these causes. Why are we as human beings so driven towards these things? Why are we as human beings driven to be a part of small groups where we can be challenged and spurred on? I think because God created within us this desire to grow, to become something, to do something, to accomplish something. It's like there's a purpose in the universe. And we're born into it. And we've got to figure this out. What's my purpose? How do I improve? How can I contribute? How can I be a part of? It's all part of us. So the person playing football, he wants to contribute to the cause, to this thing, this game that we're doing. And then there's all these other people and support players, and I find my way. Well, what's driving all of that? What is that foundational thing that God has put within us? It's a great cause. There's a great cause that underlies all of this. And because this great cause underlies it, when I see someone at a football game, you ever go to a football game and someone right in front of you has that big finger on his finger? You know, that we're number one, and it's about like this big. We're number one. And all football game long, he's swinging this thing in front of your face. Now, you take that same person, put him in a pew in church, and he'd be sitting there like this, singing away, his arms closed. But at the football game, there he is with his big number one. What is so great about this? It's just a game. 100 years from now, it won't make any difference. But for him, winning today is almost everything. And when a play goes in the right direction, he can't help it. He stands up. It doesn't matter if 1,000 people are looking at him. And he halts and he raises up his big number one. This is number one in the world. This is a great cause. Well, it's not that great, but there is a great cause behind it that's maybe prompting him or inspiring him in some ways. What is that great cause? Look on your outline, Genesis 2:16-17. This is God's words in the very beginning of the Bible. The Lord commanded the man, "You are free to eat any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat of it, you will surely die." What does that sound like? Doesn't that sound like the ground rules to some game? All right, people, we're going to start this new game. It's a game of life. It's really exciting. It's really cool. And let me tell you first about what's in bounds. Okay, what we got is all this stuff over here, everywhere you look, that's in bounds. And the fruit trees, those are in bounds. We're going to create a woman. She's going to be great. She's in bounds. All this great stuff. We're going to be naming some animals. That's going to be fun. We're going to be tilling the soil. I mean, it's a great... This is all in bounds. Okay? But over here, in the middle of the garden, this is out of bounds. Out of bounds. In bounds? Out of bounds. You go out of bounds, there'll be some penalties. Okay? Sounds like a game, doesn't it? Setting up the ground rules. Well, what happens in this game right away? Our first ancestors, what do they do with the ball? Yeah, they go out of bounds. They drop the ball. And so now God could end the game. Okay, game over. But God decides, okay, we've got to fix this game. It's a new game now. Genesis 3:15. After sin comes into the world, God speaks to the devil. And he says, "I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and hers." He, who's he? Who's this one that will be coming? "Jesus will crush your head." Whose head? Satan. "And you will strike his heel." Okay, there's a new game. And there's a new field. And we have evil on one side of the field, and we have good on the other side of the field. We have darkness on one side of the field, and we have light on the other side of the field. And one day there will become a champion for the side of light, the side of good. And he will come, and he will crush this side. And that happened 2,000 years ago. Jesus came to this earth. He died on the cross, was raised again, and it was like D-Day. You know, D-Day in World War II? They stormed the beaches. I brought a rock from this last June, I was on the Omaha beach and I took a rock. It was the site of the bloodiest battles on D-Day. Well, D-Day happened. The war continued on. There was a lot of things yet to do. But in terms of Germany's future, it was over. Once they secured the beaches, it was over. The war was effectively, or now there was all these battles. Well, 2,000 years ago, Jesus paid the cost. He died on the cross, he rose again, and the end is secure. Now we have all these skirmishes yet. We're still realizing the battle and winning these victories. So we're still in the war. But we know how it's going to end. That's the game plan that we're a part of. We're a part of this cosmic struggle between the good and the bad. And you see it reflected in all the movies. You see it reflected in all these small groups. You see it reflected in football. What do we do in football? We line up people on two different sides. And if this is my team, this is the good side. And what's this side? That's the bad side. This is my team. You're not my team. And when I cheer for this side. You see it at high school games. And they cheer. And then, I don't know if they still do it, but in my day they had this cheer. How about you? I don't know how it goes. You know what I'm saying? Have you heard that one? You! You know, and then maybe they pick it up, and then, you know, it's this. These are just high school kids. They're 18 years old. They live 15, 20 miles away. They're all Americans. We're proud to be Americans. And yet it's like, you know, what's going on here? This is big, big, big stuff. See, we make all these games into this cosmic. Why? Because we're born for this. We were born with a desire to fight for something that's worth fighting for. We were born with a desire to live for something that's important, to have a cause that's worth living for, and a cause that's worth dying for. And so we're searching for these things. Well, what is that great cause? I mean, what is it that you know, we have this contest, but what's the prize? What is winning? What are we trying to do? What are we trying to get? What's this great cause about? Isn't the great cause getting back the good that we lost? Adam and Eve started out in a perfect place, a garden. Though naked, they felt no shame. They had nothing to hide, nothing to be embarrassed about, nothing to be ashamed of. They were one with each other. Not only were they one with each other, they were also one with the nature around them. Adam was commanded to till the soil, which in Hebrew means to take care of. They were to take care of the environment, and the environment took care of them. They had a perfect relationship with God, with each other, with the environment, with God. There was perfect oneness, and they belonged. That's really what the great cause is about. It's about getting that back. It's about belonging. It's about oneness. It's about closeness. It's about being connected. Let me tell you one story. It is, in my opinion, and let me stress my opinion, probably the greatest sporting event that ever happened in the history of the world. It took place 38 years ago in Moline. We had just moved to Moline on 108th Street in Clyde Park, went to the new school, and I had two weeks to find my place on a small group football team. In ninth grade in those days, you went to the junior high. In 2 weeks, we had to play Cascade Christian School. The year before, the Moline team had won one game the whole year against Dutton. And so they were hoping to do better. They had heard that two new players were coming. One family was moving in, and that they were 6'5". And then my brother and I showed up. I had 2 weeks to figure, you know, now I'm on this small team. And what happens on a small team or a small group? Well, you have to find out who you are. There's encouragement, there's spurring, because you have to find your place. Well, it was a small little school, so I found my place. I decided I wanted to be the quarterback, but I had one person to go against. Rick DeCracker. And if you know Rick DeCracker, he goes to our church. He's not here, so I can talk about him. Tell him that I talked about him.
Okay.
Good. Rick DeCracker, he was supposedly the heir apparent from the year before, because there was a ninth grader that was the quarterback. The problem that Rick had is he was about 5'1" at that time, and he weighed about 100 pounds. And he could throw the football about 10 yards. And I was already this size. So I had an advantage. So after 2 weeks, I earned the place of quarterback. Our first game. 90 seconds left. We are down by 5 points. We have 55 yards to go. I remember the coach called a timeout. So we got up and huddled around with the coach. We all looked at the coach. Coach looked at us. Then he said, "So what are you going to do?" That was our coach. He was an English teacher. He didn't know a thing about football. So our team, we scurried together and put together a little plan. We went out, and Bruce Vandenberg was 45 yards down the field. I threw it as far as I could. He caught it, and his flag got pulled on the 7-yard line. Now there's 60 seconds left, and we have 7 yards to go to have a victory. Moline! I mean, beating someone other than Dutton. I mean, Dutton, of course. Sorry, Alice. But, you know, another victory. I mean, it was like, you know, we got into the huddle and we're all excited, we're all enthusiastic. And so I called a play where everyone goes out and goes to one side, and Rick DeCracker comes from the running back position, and he would go against the grain, and I would go this way, and then I would go this way. And the idea was that once you're out there, there'd be one defender, and he'd have to decide either to go for me, and then I throw it, or he goes for Rick, and I run in. And it worked perfectly. And he went towards me. And so I threw the ball right into Rick's hands. Right in his chest. He drops it. So now we have 40 seconds left. We get into the huddle. And we come up with a stupid play, that some running thing going around the end. It didn't work at all. Now we have 10 yards to go. We have 15 seconds. We have 15 seconds to decide what is our play and to hike the ball. And we could have a win or we could have a loss. So we got back in the huddle. And I looked back at Rick. And I said, "Rick, if we run that same play we ran at before, are you going to catch it?" And he looked back at me with defiance. "You just make sure the ball gets there." A little spurring and encouraging going on. Hiked the ball. Play to the other side. I threw the ball. This time I didn't throw it that good. He had to jump up to catch it. But he caught it. And I'll tell you, we were, you know, we had just won the Super Bowl. We had won the Stanley Cup. We were running and jumping and celebrating and ninth grade boys hugging each other. It was great. It was amazing. The next day at school, at recess time, we went out and reenacted the whole thing. You know, we're on this and then Bruce Vandenberg, he's over there. And then we talked to the coach. He has nothing for us. And then we did the whole thing. The excitement, the enthusiasm lasted a week. But the friendship lasted 38 years and counting. See, I thought it was all about football. I thought it was about this game and winning this game. Who cares? What difference does it make now? It doesn't make a bit of difference. No one cares but me. And really, I don't even care. I didn't realize at the time that it's not about football. It's not about softball. It's not about basketball. It's about relationships. It's about friendships. That's what happens along the way, doesn't it? You're in this cause. You're giving your energy and your enthusiasm. And you have hard times and tough times. You have times where you get spurred and it doesn't feel very good. And you wonder, do I really fit on this team? Do I want to be on this team? And yet someone comes along and encourages you, lifts you, and all of a sudden you improve and you get better and the whole team gets better and something happens and you make something happen. But it's the relationships that get formed along the way. See, that's what it is, isn't it? That's what it's about. It's getting back what we lost. Adam and Eve lost that closeness to one another. They lost the closeness of walking with God every day. That's what it's about. That's what the big game is about. That's the great cause. Look on your outline. The problem with small groups. You know, if that's what it is, how come people don't find God? They don't find their marriages. They don't find their families. There's a lot of brokenness in these areas, and yet people are a part of all kinds of small groups. No end of small groups that we're a part of. Genesis 11, verse 4. So very soon in the history of humankind, 11 chapters into the book. Then they said, the people, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the earth. What do they want to do? They want to make a name for themselves. That's what small groups want to do, don't they? You know, as a football team, we wanted to make a name for ourselves. We were like second to the bottom in the league. Dutton's on the bottom, of course. But then there was Moline. We want to move up in the pecking order. We want to make a name for ourselves. I want good grades. I want to go to the right school. I want a job. I want a good house. I want a good lawn. I want a good marriage. I want to be the best that I can be at horses. I want to be the best that I can be at fishing. I want these things. I want to do well at these things. It feels good to do well, of course. We want to grow. We want to be a part of something. But very subtly, sometimes these things become more about us becoming something than being something in God's greater cause. In other words, it becomes our cause. That's what happens right away in the human history, right? I mean, in Genesis chapter 3, the serpent comes to Eve and the serpent says to Eve, did God really say that you shouldn't, you know, set up this game plan and so? And then the serpent goes on to say, that's not really what's going to happen. See, what God's not telling you is if you eat of this fruit in the middle of the garden, you will be like God. Ooh, that sounds good. It sounds good to, because our self-esteems are always on the ground. If I could be somebody, well, that sounds really good. So the tendency is to be in small groups, special interest things, that make us feel like we are somebody. And soon, I mean, it's a subtle thing, soon we want to be apart from God. We want to be like God. I think that life is all about football now, not about God. Or whatever, or work, or my business, or whatever it is that I'm trying to do. So that's one tendency. One tendency is to try to be kind of like God or be God. I'm in these things because the good feeling that I get. The other, what happened when Adam and Eve, when God came around after they had sinned? What did Adam and Eve do? They hid. That's the other tendency, to escape God. To be like God or to escape God. Well, how do we escape God? Well, we get ourselves involved in all these different small groups. See, when I'm playing tennis, I'm not thinking about God. I'm not thinking about people going to hell forever in China because they've never heard of God. I'm thinking about winning this point. This is my thing. And if I could play tennis, and then from tennis, I go to work. From work, I go to this, I go to that. Then I mow my lawn, wave at the neighbors. I can schedule my whole life that I am a part of some small group that is giving me the feeling of progress, of making things happen, a cause. This is good. I feel good. And all of it designed so that I don't think about God. I don't see how it all fits into what He's trying to do. It's the way I busy myself. So don't bother with these things. Some of you kids are drawing pictures. If you could draw like four houses. It's four houses. And in each house, if you could put a square, that's Dad. He's a square. Mom is a triangle. And then the kids just put a line. The oldest one gets a long line. The next one, shorter, shorter, shorter. If you did that with each one of these four houses. Now what's needed, really, is some organization, something that helps the square and the triangle and the lines be together as a family. That's what we've been talking about the last 3 weeks. How can we help that? But what happens? The squares all go outside of their homes and they go to another building. This, all four of these homes, the squares all go to this building. So now we have all the squares in this building. All the triangles go to this building over here. Son or daughter number one goes over here with son or daughter number one. You know, we put them in classrooms. And then the second one goes over here. So what happens? You start dividing these. Here's the family unit. But we live in a culture that has thousands of small groups that are pulling everyone away. And what happens? Now, all these things that we get involved in, not one of them is a bad thing. It's just that you can get lost in those things. You can use those things to escape God, escape your wife, escape your family. Or you can use those things to be with your family, to be with the great cause that God has called us to. So that's a problem. So what's needed? If you look on your outline, the needed small groups. The needed small groups. There are a lot of small groups, but the needed small groups are the ones that help you stay on message. The ones that help you stay with the great cause. God's cause. God's cause of bringing people together. Husbands and wives coming together. Families coming together. Husbands and wives and families helping other families get their act together with God and with each other. We need to be in small groups that do that. Like what? Well, like the small groups that we have here at Pathway. We have small groups. I'll tell you more about those in a minute. But we have other small groups. If you go to our website, we have a re-engineered website. Have you seen it? Go to pathwayministries.net and look at it. And on there, on the side, it will say programs. And if you click on programs, it'll say small groups, and it talks about small groups. Then it says programs, Little Lambs, Worship Center, Boys Club, Youth Group. But then if you read what it says, I don't know who put this together, but they did a good job. Little Lambs, meet Sunday morning during the worship service with the goal of assisting parents in the task of passing on the faith to their young children. Worship Center, pre-K through second grade, meet Sunday morning during the worship service with the goal of assisting parents in the task of passing on the faith to their young children. Special attention will be given to Bible readings that the whole family is doing. Boys and Girls Club, third grade through eighth grade, meets on Tuesday night. The goal here is once again, to assist families in the task of passing on the faith to their children. They'll be studying one of the passages of the Bible readings that the whole family is doing. Special attention will be given to involving the parents. There may be children in the program whose parents can't be involved. We will have volunteer adults step in to help. We want to be a family to those who need one. Youth group. We meet every second and fourth Sunday night. The goal is to partner with parents to introduce Jesus to their children, to help them in their job of preparing their children for leadership in life and in the church. Special attention will be given to the Bible readings and how they intersect with the relevant issues of our young people's life. So we're trying as a church to make this big goal a part of all the little goals. Yes, we'll have small groups. Yes, we'll have different small groups. And some of them will be pulling all the dads here in a little group. But it'll be to support the dads when they go back home. Remember, that's the ball that gets dropped. In our culture right now, it's special interest that drives everything. And what's happening is your son is interested in this. He goes over here. Your daughter is interested in this. He goes over here. Husband is interested in this. He goes over here. The wife goes over here. Who's helping the family keep it together? There is an organization that's doing that. You know who it is? It's Disney. Right? You go to a Disney film, and they throw in stuff for the parents. Kids have no clue. And they throw in, you know why? Because they want parents and their kids sitting in the same seats together. But this is what the church should be about. Well, how do we do that? How does this happen? How does this belonging all happen? Look on your outline. I wrote down Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2 is the story of Pentecost, the Holy Spirit coming. And when the Holy Spirit comes into the disciples, you know, the tongues of flame, they stand up and they start preaching. They start talking to all these different people who have come from all over the world to participate in the Passover. And what do these people from all over the world hear? They hear their own language. that part of this Pentecostal thing was what was this message was in their own language. For the last 3 weeks, we've been talking about how God brings His grace into our lives. We've been talking about talking, listening repeatedly, our personal life with God, our marriage life, our family life. Talking was prayer, listening to the Bible repeatedly, some kind of habit. We've been talking about that. But that's what Pentecost was about. It was this talking thing. They could hear. They could understand. At the end of Acts chapter 2, it says that the people met in the temple courts daily. And they ate bread in each other's homes. They were connecting. They were talking and listening. The reason why talking and listening repeatedly works is that's how we enter into each other's stories. When you meet someone, you don't know them, and you start talking, and you start listening, what happens over a period of time? You enter their story. They enter your story. When we talk and listen to God, we enter His story. This great story that He started long ago in Genesis, when He said, this is how the game is going to be played. This is what it's going to be. We got evil on one side. We got good on the other. We enter that story when we talk and listen. Well, doing personal devotions and marriage devotions, family devotions is difficult stuff. Wouldn't it be great if we had a small group of people who would meet together for the purpose of supporting us, spurring and encouraging? So if you look on your outline, talking in a small group, prayer with your small group, listening is Bible study with a small group, and repeatedly, the habit of meeting together for this purpose, to spur and encourage one another on. The anatomy, look on your outline, the anatomy of a small group devotional habit. Now, a habit is something that gets impinged upon you. That's what a small group does. If you're into horses and you go to the horse small group, they talk about horses. And they talk about what we should do or not do. And it's a force that helps you stay connected to the horse thing. We need the same thing with the God thing, with the talking and listening to God in our homes and our families. So we need some kind of anatomy. What do we need? P stands for people. You need people. You need people to meet with. On your bulletin, there's a list of all the small groups that we have. And if you're not in a small group, you can call the name of one of these people. But if that's how you get into a small group, then we've failed. Hopefully, as a church, you come in here, we are so intent on helping you, knowing that you are not going to be able to walk with God every day in your marriage and your family without a group of people helping you, that we're constantly, a new person walks in, we invite them to our small group. C, curriculum. What do? Well, when our small groups meet together, they read the Bible. They pray together, but they also ask questions like, well, how is this going in your own home? How is this going in your marriage, in your family? G, you need goals. Every small group meeting, at the end, there's some goals. We actually, as a small group, we write out goals. We're not going to meet for 2 weeks, so what is your goal? Your goal is to memorize that verse that we keep reciting every Sunday morning, and 2 weeks from now, we're going to say it to our small group. So every 2 weeks, people write goals. S, schedule. If you're going to have a habit, you need a schedule. In ninth grade, we had football practice after school. It was a schedule. Here's the schedule. This is what we do. We've discovered in our church that most small groups need to meet at least twice a month or every other week, or the community doesn't get developed. Support. Small groups are all about supporting by encouraging and challenging. Well, the problem with supporting one another is there's walls. We've talked about walls in our personal walk. We've talked about walls in our marriage walk. We've talked about walls in our family walk. Well, there are walls in our small group walk as well. Let me just list some of those. Number one, the answer man wall. In a small group, maybe you have one person who always has all the answers. A question comes up, someone answers it. The truth is, small groups like to participate. We all want to give a shot at the answer. Or the next wall, I'm bored with you people wall. This is how small groups go. You start a small group, People are new. They're kind of anxious about it, but they're also excited. Then they join the spa group and they start sharing things, and they start sharing sensitive things. And that's pretty exciting. But then something happens in the spa group because maybe sharing some of these sensitive things. And so the spa group retreats to safer ground. But because the spa group has retreated to safer ground, the cause has been diminished, and people start getting bored and they start wondering, why am I in this group? And the last stage is they quit. Next one, fear of losing members wall. If improvements in personal and marriage and family devotional habits is the main purpose of the small group, then challenging and holding members accountable is going to play a major role. A group member may not like to be challenged or held accountable. There are two options. One, the group can stop challenging and as a result lose its purpose. Or option two, the group can keep challenging, holding on to its purpose with the possible result of having a group member leave the group. Well, the next one, fear of vulnerability. How ready are you to share with a group of other people the things in your life? Your walk with God, your walk with your spouse, your walk with your children, your walk with friends, your sharing of the faith. Then there's the fix-it wall. In group meetings, members sometimes express a growing frustration in their relationship to God or their spouse or their children, and they tell these things to the group, and then the group, like a feeding frenzy, tries to fix it. And then people stop sharing because they don't want a whole group of people trying to fix them. Sometimes we just want to share. Then there's the fear of discipline wall. To grow in any endeavor, you must first admit you are not where you want to be. There's a reason you are not where you want to be. The group is there to help you overcome whatever it is. Though you may want to grow, you may not appreciate the force applied by the group to help you accomplish it. Discipline is a process of setting goals, admission of failure, reevaluating, setting new goals. A process that may repeat itself over and over and over again. And there's a group to help you with each step in the process, but you might not appreciate the help that they give you. Or the lack of grace wall. In optimism, sometimes we set growth goals, but then in real life we fail to achieve them. We not only need people in our lives to help us see reality, we need people that can help us accept that reality and know that we are loved regardless of how well we accomplish or don't accomplish our goals. And finally, maybe the white elephant wall. There's a problem in the group. Maybe it is one member who thinks he knows it all. Maybe it's a secret revealed that the group is not ready or does not know how to face. Maybe one member said something that hurt another member, and though it may have been resolved on the surface, deep down it's still churning. It's a problem, and the group goes to great extremes to dance around it. So there are all these walls that we're going to face as small groups come together. We've seen it in our personal walk, our marriage, and our families. We're going to see it in small groups too. That's why we have a leadership meeting. All the leaders of the small groups meet once a month together to share, well, how is it going? How can we help each other as a body overcome some of these walls? Finally, you need recognition. You need recognition. This is important. I went to a church once in Oregon. They had a seminar, and they made everything in their church small groups. They had like 400 small groups. And they had like a small group rally. And people came into the building, and it was like a convention. They had these big banners and signs of this branch of the small group system. I don't know if they did it geographically or how they did it. But these people would come in, leaders. Hey, you know, we're the blue, you know, and they would cheer. And then the next one would cheer, and the next one would cheer. It was like, this is important to us. These small groups and what they're doing in people's lives is really important. I don't know how we can do that. How can we recognize that this small group, that all the other small groups get recognized. There's magazines, there's stadiums that get built, there's trophies. This is the most important small group you can be in. Finally, the leadership. Where am I? The leadership connection. Leadership connection is, okay, you're in a small group, look on the bottom there, invite someone to your small group. So I'm saying, if you walked in, we should have 6 or 7 people inviting you to their small group. Why? Because this is the most, there are a lot of small groups. There are a lot of causes out there. But the most important one is this one that can hold your family walking with God, can hold your marriage walking with God, hold you personally to your walk with God. There isn't a more important cause. There isn't a more important small group that you can be a part of. So invite someone to it. If you're not in one and you don't get invited, then look on the back of the bulletin. Call somebody up. We can't do much on our own. We need each other. That's why Jesus is the head of a body. And His grace to us is not just what He did on the cross, but what He does in the body. Next week, we're going to talk how the small groups then combine and become this thing called the church. So we're going to be looking at the church. Let's pray together.